You are now joining Children of the Watch.
That's right. It's the number one after show for all things Star Wars television. I'm your host, Alex Maxwell, and joining me, as always, is...
Mac Lacey! Alex, Chapter 1, Obi-Wan Kenobi Breakdown. We have been waiting for this so long, and... Oh man, did this premiere not disappoint, in my opinion.
Oh my gosh. I'm just going to go straight up and tell you right now, I loved it. Mac, I think I can speak for you and say that you loved it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It blew my expectations out of the water, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And it did several things that I was not expecting the show to do.
Which is such a delight. It's so amazing. It was such a romp. I feel like we're just touching areas of the galaxy that I didn't necessarily think we were going to get ever. And it's a very fun time to be a Star Wars fan, I think.
This was just a great time. Now, it actually kind of released earlier than what we anticipated. Had I known that it was going to come out 12 Eastern Standard Time instead of Pacific, I would have just stayed up to watch it. But I went to bed so early so I could get up at 3 a.m. to watch it. And then I find out it was already out.
all of it was for naught.
But that's okay. We're still here getting the breakdown done. And if you're new to the show, maybe you've never listened to us before, what we do is scene-by-scene breakdowns. We go over every nitty-gritty detail that you need to know, but we also don't want to talk over you. So maybe you're a new Star Wars fan and you don't really know everything there is to know. We're going to keep you informed, but also try not to get you lost in that conversation. We'll explain everything to you as we go through the scene by scene breakdowns, but we also have a fun voicemail hello there hotline that you can call with your thoughts and theories, and we absolutely want you to do that. So our voicemail hotline number is 205-259-6675. So we'll do the scene-by-scene breakdowns the day of the episodes coming out. And then a few days later, we will have the Hello There Hotline episodes where you guys call in, let us know what you thought about the episode, give your thoughts, your theories, or maybe something that you noticed that we didn't notice and point that out. It's just a fun time to really dive in that way. So make sure you do that.
That's kind of fun. Some of our most fun episodes to do, just hearing from y'all, getting to see, who's all in our community and everything, and all just come together over this show that we like. And I think this is going to be a great show for the Hello There Hotline.
Oh my gosh, there's going to be so much.
Yeah, for sure. And we also have a Patreon. So if you're liking what we're doing here, you can go to patreon.com/TheMandalorianWatch. That's what we used to be called, so that's the URL still. Check out the tiers over there. We've got a really cool, fun Discord community. And it's always important to in season is the time you really want to be a part of all that. So now's a great time to join the Patreon if you haven't already.
Absolutely. And then you can also purchase a Hello There t-shirt from keepthewatch.com, which is our merch site. It's a pretty cool shirt. Check it out. We're kind of rushing through the business stuff because we want to talk about this episode. Follow us on socials at COT Watch on Twitter and Instagram. I think that does it for everything business wise.
There is no reason to wait any longer. There is no reason.
So part one of Obi-Wan Kenobi, the director is Deborah Chow, who, if you're not familiar with Deborah Chow, she actually did, in my opinion, two of the best episodes of season one of The Mandalorian, which was the third episode, and then the penultimate episode of that season. And the writers are new to Star Wars. They are Joby Harold, Haseen Amani, and Stuart Beattie. They all three collaborated on this first episode, and I think they pretty much collaborated on the story overall for the whole thing. So it's really nice. And we kind of had this conversation a little bit this morning, Mac, but it's nice to have somebody else's perspective on Star Wars. And that's probably another podcast conversation.
When we get a little more of the show behind us, I think we'll be more informed to speak about that and everything. But there's an interesting conversation to be had there just about you know, new perspectives and stuff like that. So
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, fantastic job so far. I am on board and excited to see what they're going to roll out for the rest of the show.
Yeah. And the episode title is just part one. So they're not really doing it like the Mandalorian or the Book of Boba Fett, where it's like chapters and then it had a title for the chapter. This is just part one of Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I kind of like the straightforwardness of that.
I do too. It makes it feel, this show feels more cinematic, I think, than the Mandalorian maybe. Even, I mean, the Mandalorian feels super cinematic, but just there's something that makes this, watching this feel more like being in the theater watching one of the saga films to me.
It really does. And maybe that's partly because Ewan McGregor, Hayden Christensen are back reprising their roles, but right. there's also like a level to it that, it just feels big. It does feel like a movie. And at one point, Obi-Wan Kenobi was going to be a movie before they decided to shift it towards a television series. Probably around the time of Solo, they decided, you know what, maybe this would work better as a series instead of a movie. Yeah. But you can still feel the influence of how they thought about it when they were making this.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, so let's jump into the breakdown. To start off the brand new series, we get an entire recap of the prequels.
Yes, I think that was such a good thing to do. And it kind of helps the timeline thing that we've been talking about. A lot of times when you're turning on a brand new Star Wars show, it can be confusing to know just when in the overall story you are. This got you up to speed on everything you needed to know for Obi-Wan's character thus far and everything like that. But then it also tells you exactly when we are, you know?
Yes.
Which is perfect.
Yeah. I feel like the other shows need to do more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like they definitely need to kind of let us know when exactly is this taking place and commit to it. Right. Like the series has. So in the recap of the prequels, there are some things that kind of stood out to me. And I think recaps are actually super important to watch because it frames your mind for where we're going. So absolutely. This will kind of frame our mind for the entire series. We see Anakin pod racing and he's pushing on the controls forward, like we will see Luke do pretending later.
Yeah.
We see Qui-Gon discussing the Chosen One prophecy and, of course, the iconic duel with Darth Maul.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see Anakin and Obi-Wan in Revenge of the Sith and in Attack of the Clones, where they really emphasize the brotherhood between them.
Yes.
And then we get a great reminder that in trying to save Padme from death, that's when Anakin fell to the dark side. He did it because he was trying to hold on to Padme. And we're also reminded of Qui-Gon being able to speak from beyond the grave. That's the last thing that they really leave us with in that recap. And to me, Mac, I think that tells us we're getting Liam Neeson at some point in this series, right?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems that way. I love that this just gives us everything that we need to be focusing on. It like this recap, I think, kind of tells us what's going to be important, you know. So yeah, the bond between Obi-Wan and Anakin, I'm super excited to see. We've seen how Kenobi is plagued by that, you know, with some nightmare situations and stuff like that. So, but then, you know, the Force stuff certainly seems like we're going to get Liam Neeson. I'm glad that they put that out there again, just because that might not be top of everybody, you know, every fan's mind.
It was a good recap. And then the light shimmers over the Lucasfilm logo and it turns golden. I really like that look. It's a nice clean look for the Lucasfilm logo.
Yeah.
And then we have a new intro music as well. And the intro is new. We get the armorer included in that. And then for some reason, a mouse droid.
Yeah.
Why do we get a mouse droid?
I was pumped about it, honestly. I'm interested to see like 10 years from now, if we can look back on all of these different television opening sequences and see if there's any kind of overall picture that they're all painting that we're just not seeing right now, you know?
Yeah.
So far, it just kind of seems to be like, here's some characters, you know?
Yeah, I noticed Hunter from the Bad Batch as well. His helmet was in there.
Yeah.
It was interesting. It was interesting. I'm still pondering the secrets of the mouse droid. And they probably just threw that in there to like mess with people like me and you who will think about that.
Yeah, get our tinfoil hats on.
Exactly. Yeah. So then we open right on Coruscant at night. It's still good to be back on Coruscant, by the way.
For sure. We haven't been there in a minute, but it's such an important planet, you know?
So yeah.
Nice to check back in. And this is really the first time we've seen Imperial Coruscant, right?
Well,
oh, no. Sorry.
Yeah. We'll get there. We'll get there. Speeders zoom across the background as we draw back to a group of helmeted Jedi younglings training with a Jedi master. Then a set of doors open and two clone troopers rush in to attack. And I think this is the first time we actually have live action clone troopers. I'm not really sure if the Order 66 scene in the Book of Boba Fett were live action or not, but
in
you could tell.
In preparation for this moment, I went back and watched the Order 66 scene of Chapter 7 of the Book of Boba, or Chapter 6. And I think they are CGI.
That's what I think too.
It's hard to tell. They're a lot better. Yeah, the animation is a lot better than Attack of the Clones. So it's a little bit hard to tell, but I think they're CGI in that sequence.
Yeah. And so like basically in all the prequels, the clone troopers were always CGI.
Right.
They were never like people in suits.
A clone trooper armor, like actual, an actual clone armor prop was never fabricated. Like
that's
not
crazy.
Once.
That's crazy. Yeah. So yeah, these clone troopers rush in to attack. These are the 501st, which is under the direct control of Anakin Skywalker. They eventually become known as Vader's Fist. They're a very like well-known stormtrooper regiment. And you can tell by the blue in their armor, that's always going to be Anakin's clone troopers.
Yeah.
And then the Jedi cuts down the two troopers and then rushes out into the hallway as chaos descends on the Jedi temple. And in the background, another Jedi falls as the clones attack. And you just can, you can feel like Order 66 in a different way that I feel like we've never felt before.
We've always seen it kind of at a distance, like through characters that we haven't really been following, you know, like all the Jedi that go down in Order 66 are not necessarily like the A-list, you know, players from the saga.
We're looking at you, Ki-Adi Mundi.
But this, like, it felt visceral.
It did.
You could feel the fear, the fact that it starts out serene and then immediately, you know, the Jedi taking care of the kids is springing into action. It happens so quick. It's out of nowhere. Just like it was terrifying to kind of experience for a second, you know, like the filmmaking did such a good job at conveying that.
Yeah. Just even the way the camera moved always to kind of focus on the kids and like them kind of stopping and whenever a clone trooper got near. Just also, by the way, we don't know who these Jedi are. These are just Jedi in the temple. They don't really have a name. I'm sure they'll get a name eventually, but we don't know who they are. But also to think of like those kids, they trusted those clones, I'm sure. You know, like they've been a part of the Republic. Everything's been fine up until this point. That's got to be a very shocking thing and scary thing as they're trying to escape. So, as I said, in the background, another Jedi falls as the clones attack, and the Master continues to protect them as they rush out onto an interior bridge in the temple. And we did see this scene, but I think we saw it in Revenge of the Sith from the other side.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Yeah.
She's finally awesome, by the way.
The
way she defends them is so like self-sacrificing.
Yes. Yeah. She's just always trying to put herself between the kids and danger and everything. And just like the way she's spinning around, covering so much ground to protect the kids kind of from all angles, you know. Just really, it was fascinating to watch, but it was also terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, she's finally brought down by blaster fire, taking out the nearest clones as she goes down. And her saber falls to the ground, and the younglings question what they should do next. And there's only one thing that they can do, and that's run. And as they run, this is the creepiest part of that whole sequence. We can hear Palpatine give out Order 66 over like all these different comms.
Yeah, just over and over, just building. They're bringing the level on that track up, and it
was good. Just, yeah,
like leaves you with this just like kind of hopeless feeling, you know? Yeah. Just everything feels so final and definite.
Yes, yes. And as they run, we pull out and we cut to black, and then we get the title card of Obi-Wan Kenobi. We are in a brand new Star Wars series, and I'm loving it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Just, this is
what
incredible.
An incredible opening scene for a series.
It
so
really,
good.
Really was. I was trying to like look and see, like, do I recognize any of these kids or these like Jedi that are defending them? Is Grogu around? Are they going to get Grogu? What's going on? That was in my mind.
It was too for me. Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know.
We'll see. We'll get the answer to Grogu.
We will for sure. We open with this scene for a very specific reason, I think. And I don't think we completely have all the answers to what that reason is yet. But I think it's important to like keep this opening scene in mind while watching in the rest of the series.
I agree. Yes.
So just everybody kind of put a pin in the opening scene, have that, you know, at arm's length, ready to be brought to your memory.
We might go back to it. We might end up going back to the scene and continuing it or picking up before it.
Yeah, we'll see. And we'll talk about that more later in the break.
Yeah. So we open back up on Tatooine and Mos Eisley, and below we are told it's 10 years later. And we talked about this before, but I think they should do more of this in the other shows. I think that just really helps establish, okay, when is this? What's going on?
Yep.
Everyone's on the same page, and I love that.
Yeah.
And then we cut to the busy city streets as vendors and people mill about, and then the locals begin looking up at the sky, and a shadow of a menacing ship flies over. And a gunmetal pronged ship drops to the city street, and the ramp opens to reveal the Grand Inquisitor, the fifth brother, and the third sister, Reva.
Yeah.
And if you want more info on who the Inquisitors are, their background, kind of their stories, we actually did an episode talking about the Inquisitors. You can find that on our feed. I think that would be really informative for you while you're waiting for the next episode.
Yeah.
And people scatter out of the way. They know that these people are bad. They just look evil, right?
Yes. I mean, you don't need to have any concrete knowledge of who these people are to know that it's bad news.
Exactly.
It's immediate bad vibes.
Yeah. And they all avert their gazes as the Inquisitors stare at them, and then they stride outward. His yellow eyes take in the populace. And Mac, it kind of seemed to me that the Grand Inquisitor's eyes would go in from yellow to a kind of more dull color from time to time. Did you notice that?
Yes, I think a lot of it had to deal with lighting. Those initial images we got of him, they're all when he's like he's in the shade on a super bright sunny day, right? And so I noticed as he was walking in and out of different lighting, his eyes would kind of pick up the light in different ways, you know? But it also seemed like maybe they got redder when he got madder.
That's how I took it.
And we talked a little bit about that in our Revenge of the Sith commentary.
Yeah, we
Patreon
did.
Patreon that we did. The rules on when a dark side user's eyes go all red and stuff are kind of foggy. But
yeah,
it definitely seemed like they reacted a little bit to what he was feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Grand Inquisitor stops and snarls, and then they head towards an open-aired saloon that looks like it's straight out of Batu. And the bartender gulps nervously and steps out to meet him halfway. And the Grand Inquisitor announces that they know who they are and what they're there to do. They're there to hunt Jedi. And as he speaks, his eyes scan the patrons of the bar. He's kind of looking as he's talking, and he says, "Do you know the key to hunting a Jedi, friend? It is patience. Jedi cannot help what they are. And then he steps out towards a wall with what appears to be lightsaber marks on it. That's kind of how I took that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
That's how I took it. And then the Grand Inquisitor says their compassion leaves a trail. And he goes on to explain that he's heard rumors of a Jedi right here in that saloon. And he's probably a wanderer looking for others like him, but came across people that needed help. And then he goes on to say, now, if he were smart, he'd keep moving. But the Jedi Code is like an itch. He cannot help it.
Yeah, that's important to know about their, about his in particular hunting philosophy, I think. And it's informative of kind of the inherent danger for Obi-Wan, you know, or experiencing it through this other Jedi. But I think all of this is showing kind of just how precarious the situation Obi-Wan is in is. It's very, all of it is very Hans Landa, from the one movie.
Well, that's kind of how like it feels like it's operating, right? They do kind of feel like Nazis a little bit hunting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it.
Yeah. It's yeah. They're terrifying. It's, it's yeah. bad.
Yeah.
And these instances in Star Wars, I think, are important for, we got a lot of this kind of stuff in Rogue One, you know, when we just like get a sense of the terror of living under the Empire, like the day-to-day, this is kind of a routine visit, just getting people, you know, these people have to deal with crazy bad guys showing up all the time, you know.
Right. And I feel like we're gonna get even more of a sense of that in the Andor series of like
what
life looks like under the rule of the Empire, like day-to-day. And that one,
our slate is super full, but we're gonna have to find some kind of time to talk about Andor a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. Maybe on the voicemail hotline episode a little bit.
Yeah, we'll see.
So as the Grand Inquisitor continues his speech, his eyes seem to brighten with their yellow twinge, and Reva seems tired of the diatribe and throws a knife right at the saloon owner, but it stops right in front of his face, and the man with the markings on his face is subtly raising his hand, stopping the knife, and they've spotted him. They kind of knew that would draw him out.
Yeah.
And the man gets up to run, but he's blocked by Reva, and the Grand Inquisitor wants him for interrogation, but Reva seems really eager to kill him.
Yeah.
And the Jedi man says that they're wasting their time, they'll never find all of them, but then Reva tries to kill him with her lightsaber. It singes his shoulder, but the Grand Inquisitor is stopping the saber from going any further, and the Grand Inquisitor pushes her aside with the Force, but the man is able to escape with a bit of assistance from the Force and bringing down part of the saloon as he disappears into the market.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that you could immediately see the tension between Reva and the Grand Inquisitor. They waste no time kind of putting that right out there, you know?
And it makes sense with where it goes in the second episode.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like they needed to get to that quickly.
They did. They did. But you immediately get the sense that Reva is ambitious, but she is not cautious. Like, it seems to me the Grand Inquisitor is more about like, yeah, like why would we not want to take the time to like get all the information we could out of, you know, this Jedi? And like, he's more of a long game person.
Right.
Reva wants to do it right now.
Yeah. She's very impatient.
Yeah.
She's very impatient. And the Grand Inquisitor tells Reva that she's reckless, while Reva argues that they're chasing after scraps. And she says, we should be hunting bigger prey. And the Grand Inquisitor replies, he is not yours to find. We are past this, Third Sister. I will not warn you again. You will forget this fixation with Kenobi, or I will relieve you of your duties. Is that clear? Interesting. So that also gives us some background of Reva has been looking for Kenobi specifically for a long time. And the Grand Inquisitor doesn't want her to look for him.
He is not yours to find, says a lot.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because, I mean, he's talking about Vader, right?
Or himself.
Maybe himself.
Yeah. But one of the two.
Yeah.
One of the two, like, I think the Grand Inquisitor is threatened by how ambitious she is. Like, I think he's thinking she's going to take my spot.
Well, she's definitely gunning for it.
No doubt.
She definitely thinks she should be the Grand Inquisitor.
Yeah. Yeah. So she is angry, but submits to him. And as he leaves, she mutters, "Consider him forgotten." And then the image dissolves into the twin suns. And then we zoom in on a whale-like carcass in the middle of the desert. At first, I thought, is this a Pergil that has crashed to the ground on Tatooine? And Pergil are basically giant space whales in Star Wars Rebels that can travel through hyperspace somehow. Yeah. They are mentioned later in the episode, but I don't think this is a Pergil. This is like some sort of Tatooine creature.
Yeah, it looked like a big manta ray.
Yeah,
it was like a chain of manta rays is what it looked like a little bit.
I assume it swims under the sands of Tatooine.
Yeah, like a sand shark type deal.
Yeah,
it seems like it was like beached and dead, and then they just like set this camp up to extract all of the meat and everything from it.
I gotta give you credit, Mac. In one of our predictions, you had basically said it. He is working at a Pacific Rim style work camp, and
yeah,
here it is.
I'm not even gonna try to dodge the praise for being right about that.
You just accept it. Just accept that. I mean, like, who could have nailed that but you?
That was such a left field specific thing to.
Turns out that's exactly what it is. They're extracting meat from a giant kaiju.
From a kaiju.
So behind it, a station of tents and structures work on cutting the meat from the dead whale, and our view tracks to a conveyor belt where workers carve out meat chunks, and we pause on Obi-Wan Kenobi, and a whistle sounds and signaling the end of their shift, and Obi-Wan cuts off a small piece of meat to put inside of his cloak. And at first I thought, that's kind of weird, Obi-Wan. Why would you be hiding meat in your clothes? But to each their own. I'm like, Matt, you kind of look like, have you never done that before, Alex? have you never cut off dead meat and hid it in your clothes?
No, I'm just like, yeah, Obi-Wan's example is teaching us that it is okay to steal from work. So, I want to go on the record, and this is not my official position, but...
Oh, man, that's good. So he joins the line as the worker in front of him receives only half of his pay, and the foreman pushes him. He starts bullying him. Obi-Wan just scowls at the foreman, but he decides not to intervene. You can kind of tell that Obi-Wan doesn't like it, but he also doesn't want to get involved anymore. And something from the very onset of this show that I'm noticing, he's in a very similar position as Luke Skywalker was in The Last Jedi.
That's very true. That's very true. Sort of this like caught between maybe being kind of some like part of the last hope, you know, and then the need for secrecy, and then also just dealing with his own personal, you know, failures and insecurities. Like, he's kind of paralyzed by those, I think, in a way. I love that it takes a long time from Obi-Wan being on screen to us even hearing him speak. Like,
yes,
a lot
really
of
does,
this,
yeah.
he's just going through his day in silence, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought that was a powerful way to kind of get us introduced into his mindset.
And I really like how they frame this episode, because we see this almost exact same sequence of events three times throughout the episode, where we kind of get to see the grind that he's living and like the dull wasting kind of his life is that's going on.
Right. I'm like, we can all relate to that to some degree, right? Just like in the day to day, the grind, you know? And yeah, I love these little glimpses into daily life in Star Wars. We're normally following these like you know, demigod mythological type characters that are saving the world all the time. But it's so fun to just like watch somebody cook lunch.
It really is. I'm so fascinated by it. It's so good.
I'm glad we brought the instant hydrating food back from that we got in Force Awakens, you know?
It's so cool. It's so cool. So after Obi-Wan witnesses the Foreman really bully people and kind of like challenge him, are you going to do anything? Obi-Wan does nothing. They leave on a hover transport and Obi-Wan folds his arms as they head towards either Mos Eisley or Anchorhead. It's not really clear, but I think it's Mos Eisley. And later we see Obi-Wan head towards his EOP and he feeds it the whale meat. And then I'm like, oh, okay. Like,
yeah,
I'm glad Obi-Wan's not eating that. That's probably not healthy for him to eat.
I'm like, how long has that meat just been in the sun?
Right. And it kind of explains why the Jawa says that later that he stinks, because like, I'm sure it's the meat that he's working with. Yeah. So he takes his EOP out onto the street and he rides it out into the desert, and Obi-Wan arrives to the Jedlin Wastes, where there's an opening in a structure of caves, and a sensor scope emerges from the entrance and flashes blue, and he checks it before entering. So it's basically like a little ring security system he's got set up.
If it's pretty blue, much,
he's good to go. If it's red, somebody's been in his home.
Yep.
So it's just a nice roomy cave that he enters. He doesn't have his house yet.
Yeah. I had that thought. I was like, okay, so at some point he buys a house. But that's not yet. Like,
I think he builds the house on top of this cave structure.
That can make sense. Yeah.
I think that's what's going to happen.
And then this becomes his secret bat cave for when he needs to go do a Jedi thing.
His Obi-Wan cave. Yes. While at home, he cooks a stew very much like Rey in The Force Awakens, like you pointed out. Just a little bit of water and that stew is done almost instantly. This is a technology we absolutely need in the real world.
Yeah, why isn't everyone we have working on this?
All the scientists on this now. He takes his food outside and he eats alone, looking into the desert. And you really get this idea that he is solemn. He is alone. He's disconnected from everything. But then from behind, a Jawa enters with a small tub of scrap. And this Jawa seems pretty familiar, and it might be Obi-Wan's only friend.
Yeah. It's the first person he talks to all day, right?
Yeah.
they're on first name basis. So
yeah. Yeah, they seem pretty familiar, and Obi-Wan asks if she has it, and we are shown that an old toy of the T-16 Skyhopper, which is really cool, Mac. Why is this cool?
Cuz we see Luke playing with it in New Hope. And so it's also just cool because like, even through all of this, Obi-Wan's just like trying to buy a present for his weird nephew, you know? Not that Luke is weird, but it's a weird relation. Yeah. But
right.
kind of his nephew.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's fun, as you know, you love to see it.
You do love to see it. It's just
for kids is good.
It was really cool. It's like, oh, there's
the official stance of Children of the Watch.
That is the official stance. Buying presents for kids is cool. But I never thought ever that we would get the origin story of the T-16 Skyhopper toy, but we have. We are.
Yeah.
I'm glad we have it now. I've been wondering. So they haggle over the price, and the vaporator makes a noise where it's revealed that the Jawa Tika stole the processor board and is willing to sell it back to him. And they have a nice little exchange there.
Yeah, I respect the hustle.
So does Obi-Wan.
He's pretty fine with it. He's like, I'm going to make sure you know I know. But
exactly.
That's fine.
Then Tika mentions they found something from that old Jedi's ship and hands him a belt. Tika explains that a Jedi escaped out into the Dune Sea, Inquisitors and everything. And Obi-Wan says that he's heard that all the Jedi were extinct, and hands the belt back to her. And Tika leaves, but you can see the concern on his face.
Yeah.
And so this is the Jedi that we saw earlier that the Inquisitors were chasing, who we will meet later. His name is Nori, and he is the worst Jedi of all time. I hate him. I don't know why, but I do.
Quick question for you.
Yes, go ahead.
When Tika's talking about the Jedi's old ship, to me, I thought that was maybe like Obi-Wan's old
ship. I did too.
So like maybe it's his belt that he's getting back, kind of.
But then they start talking about Nori and the Inquisitors. So that's where I kind of got confused. Maybe what Tika means is like that ship is old.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like it's a, you know,
antique. Yeah.
Yeah.
Millennium. I imagine it's a Jedi starfighter.
Yeah.
We'll see.
And that'd be like a 10-year-old design. So.
Yeah. And in Star Wars, that's 50 years old.
You know. It's a millennia.
Exactly. So Tika leaves, but like I said, you can see the concern on his face. And then we cut to night and Obi-Wan sleeps on a bedroll. You can kind of see the moon is shining down on him. He's having nightmares of the duel on Mustafar that was in Revenge of the Sith. And he sees Qui-Gon dying, Padme dying, all intercut with Anakin and the children. Obi-Wan awakes and his eyes are searching the darkness. It's like the Force. This is kind of the vibe I'm getting. It's like the Force is trying to get him back into the fight. These are all signs.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a great observation. The effect visually is kind of the same that like Anakin has when it's more of like a Force dream type thing, you know? Mm-hmm. I really like that theory.
Well, and then like even not just the dreams, but like Nori ending up on Tatooine coincidentally, you know, like it's not a coincidence.
Little pushes.
It's the Force kind of working to get Obi-Wan where Obi-Wan needs to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's kind of how I'm interpreting it. So in the darkness of the cave, Obi-Wan calls out for Qui-Gon. He says, Master Qui-Gon, Master. But only the echo of silence answers. No, Qui-Gon doesn't say anything.
There is, and I only, there's a slight swell. Like a bass sub swell at that interesting moment, which they typically bring in when someone's using the Force or something like that. What I like to think of that, like kind of how I wanted to think of that, is Qui-Gon was maybe trying to reach out, but Obi-Wan is still out of reach. He couldn't hear it. He's not open to it enough yet.
So
the interaction was kind of there, but the connection hasn't been made. That circuit's still kind of open, you know?
I love that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that. So we cut to the morning as Obi-Wan rides his EOP through the desert, and they arrive at a rocky area, and he climbs out onto the rocky outcropping. He takes out his pair of macro binoculars and watches as little Luke Skywalker, helps Uncle Owen on the farm. And it's just like, this is so cool. Like, I can't believe we are getting this. We're getting this part of Luke Skywalker's life. Even if it's from a distance, we're getting to see kind of what was life like for Luke Skywalker on the farm. Well, this is what it was like. He's helping Uncle Owen. But then when Owen's not looking, he takes off running and just disappears.
Yeah.
He's being a kid.
Right.
He's being a kid, and Owen calls.
He's being his father's child a little bit too.
He is being his father's child, and Owen calls out for him, and Beru comes out to look. But Luke had climbed up on top of the house and is pretending to fly a ship with the goggles over his face. And this is a clear reminder of a young Anakin in pod racing, right?
Absolutely.
Flying the Naboo starfighter. Like the movements are even the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Obi-Wan looks down, he's heartbroken, and you can just kind of see like the regret on Obi-Wan's face, just the grief that he feels. And then once it goes dark, after dark, Obi-Wan rides towards the farm and leaves the T-16 toy for Luke. Kind of like Obi-Wan's a little bit like Santa Claus.
Yeah.
Leaving presents out.
Obi-Claus.
Obi-Claus.
Santa Juan.
Santa Juan. Later, Chris, he rides a...
Kenobi Kringle.
Oh, Chris Kenobi. Later, he rides across the desert at night, and we get the sense that someone is watching him. We see kind of their point of view, and someone calls out, and it's the man the Inquisitors are hunting. And he says, "Master, I thought I saw you in town, but I wasn't sure." And he introduces himself as Nari, and Nari is just the worst, Mac. I don't know why I don't like him. I don't like him, though.
He's just immediately trying to make it hot for Obi-Wan. Like, he's like, "We have to go help people and save the galaxy." And everyone's like, "Shh." What?
He even pulls his lightsaber out. It's like, dude, put it away.
My guy. Read the
room. My guy. What are you doing?
No ability to just read, like, the mood of a situation.
Golly.
It's like, Nari, we're not doing this right now. Like, I don't know if you got the memo, but we're in hiding.
And Obi-Wan's like, dude, I am not Obi-Wan. I'm Ben. Stop Ben. Calling me Obi-Wan.
Like, get the hint.
Obi-Wan tries to convince him that he's making a mistake, but Nari is insistent. Obi-Wan says his name is Ben. Nari shows him the lightsaber, and Obi-Wan's like, "Okay, you got to leave." And Nari says, "But I have nowhere to go. They're hunting me. You have to help me." So here's my question, Mac. I want to stop right here. Did Nari come to Tatooine to look for Obi-Wan?
That's kind of what it seems like. I think that's maybe what the Grand Inquisitor is getting at with the Jedi hunting themselves. You know, I feel like they are already well aware of Nari and, you know, where he is and where he's going and everything. And they were just letting him lead them to Obi-Wan, maybe.
Interesting. Yeah, it could go either way, but it just, and again, maybe it's the Force kind of acting to get Obi-Wan back in the fight, and Nari just ends up on Tatooine to kind of spur him on a little bit. But it did seem like Nari was like, "Hey, you're here, Obi-Wan. I know you. Let's go fight the Empire together, like I've always dreamed of." And poor Nari.
Yeah. No, never had a chance.
It's shocking he's made it 10 years. It is shocking.
He just found somewhere safe and never moved.
And then when he did, he immediately dies.
Immediately got. Yeah.
Obi-Wan takes the saber and he says, "You want my help? Take this. Walk into the middle of the desert and bury it in the ground." Just like Rey in the Rise of Skywalker. How about that?
Lots of lightsaber burying going on lately.
Stay hidden. Live a normal life. Nari asks about the people that need them, about the fight. And Obi-Wan tells him that the fight is done. They've lost. And Nari says, "What happened to you? You were once a great Jedi." And I was just like, from my room, "Shut up, Nari. You don't know anything. Leave him alone.
Do you know who you're talking to?" Yeah.
That's Obi-Wan Kenobi.
But I mean, like, that's... I love that he's got that attitude, though, because it just shows how far Obi-Wan has kind of like lost his way, you know, how far he's off the path. But just Nari is the worst.
He is truly the worst, which eventually means he will become my favorite at some point, just like the speeder bike chase
Toro Calican.
I know he'll never replace Toro.
Okay.
Nobody can. Though I do have a theory that Toro's dad is in episode 2. We'll get to that. We will get to that.
The answers you've been waiting for, audience.
Secrets.
next episode.
Secrets revealed. Obi-Wan orders him back to the town because the time of the Jedi is over, and he leaves Nari in darkness where he belongs. And then we cut to a lake. I'm sorry.
Just that's not in the show. That's just Alex editorializing, everybody. just a heads up. You hate this man.
Sorry. I apologize to Nari and his family. Then we cut to a lake and pan up to reveal Alderaan. Holy cow, Mac. Wow.
And if I'm going to pick a Star Wars planet to live on, it's Alderaan.
Absolutely.
Beautiful natural landscape that, like, all forest. This pristine streamlined architecture that, like, moves with the land, you know?
It's the mountains, like Lord of the Rings unreal. Meets Star Wars a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of the vibe that I get from Alderaan.
Yeah. I would move there in a heartbeat.
Absolutely. Great vacation planet. In a white room, three handmaidens dress a young girl. We're led to believe this is Leia, and I'm freaking out as this is happening. A regal woman enters. It's Brea, Leia's adoptive mother, and she reminds the handmaidens that her sister's whole family is visiting, and she says, they need our support, she says, so try not to make anyone cry. Perfect line, because, I mean, like, how can you not immediately think of Carrie Fisher?
I know. Line? Just the wit, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
No, it's perfect. It's everything you wanted in I don't know. Maybe let's get a little bit further into the story and then we can take a second to talk about the scene in general.
It's so good. So then she notices that it's not Leia at all. She's not even human, and they're pulling a prank on her. And Brea turns and says that she's either in the cellar, kitchen, or the woods. And then we cut to an aerial view of the forest and then zoom down as little Leia runs through the woods, and a small toy droid is following her, and she arrives to a very large tree and begins climbing it. And she dangles her feet as the droid lands beside her, and she begins telling the droid all the ships that she sees, making up stories about them in her head. And the last ship she notices is a Tri-Wing, who she says is probably an Aquilian Ranger, probably scouting for Mersan pirates. Now, this is really interesting. An Aquilian Ranger is a paramilitary trooper for the Rebel Alliance eventually. And they're based on the original Luke design, with the mask that Luke wears. You know the one that I'm talking about where he's facing down Vader?
I do, when the lightsabers are attached to the backpack still, kind of, I think, maybe.
Yeah, they're based off that design.
Cool. Gotcha.
Yeah, so that was kind of a nice little touch. And Brea calls out to Leia. She orders her down. Brea says, no more Lola, that's her droid, for the rest of the day. It's kind of like an iPad, I guess.
But it's also a little weird because that's like her pet. So it's like, we're going to be like, oh, your dog is going to have to go to sleep for the rest of the day. It's a little weird, but.
Oh, boy. What I love about this is the attitude, the demeanor for Leia is perfect. It's great casting and writing for her.
Yes, whoever did the casting deserves all the awards. Couldn't pick a better, you know, little girl to play little Leia. Like,
I mean, she's perfect.
Spot on demeanor. She's got the wit. Her comedic timing is great. You know,
so good.
Just got that fire that you want.
Yeah. So her name is Vivian Lyra Blair. And she's fantastic. Kid's going to do a lot, I think. And she's like made herself a star from these scenes in this show. So I think she's done a great job.
Let's just talk about Leia overall.
Right?
We weren't really even talking about Leia as like a huge possibility we were considering. You know, we are always like, yeah, that'd be possible. Luke, we feel like, and I just thought Leia was always going to be kind of safe and secure growing up cushy on Alderaan, you know?
No, she's scrapping.
Right. So I love that we're like, my expectations were subverted just by this first episode, even in a delightful, wonderful way. I'm so glad we're getting to see little Leia. Like, it's, I don't know. It's just a really great turn, I think.
They could totally do a young Leia series with this girl, and it'd be very, very successful. Yeah.
They could get like 100 watch hours out of.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So Leia apologizes and hugs Brea, but then tries to snatch Lola in the process. And this just shows the show has already done such a great job of highlighting how much Leia is actually like Anakin, which like I kind of always knew the fiery temperament was from Anakin, but it's showing it in a way that I've never really considered it before.
Yeah. Yeah. Just the absolute, like the stubbornness, the immediate questioning of any kind of authority and like instincts to go against whatever they said, you know?
Yep. That is Anakin's daughter for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So as they enter back into the palace, a figure watches in the shadows, and we cut back to the whale meat station. Same scene, different day. Obi-Wan cuts a piece of meat, exit works, riding back on the transport into town. He arrives back at the Yopi, but then the Skyhopper toy is thrown at his feet.
Yep.
Owen Lars, he's angry with him and he doesn't want Luke to have it. And Obi-Wan says, there's more to life than your farm, Owen. He needs to see that. There's a whole galaxy out there. And what I really love about that line is I love the contrast of this and then what we just saw with Leia. She's experiencing that life and Luke is not.
Right.
I love that. That's really good writing.
I think so too. Like,
that is good writing.
Yeah. I don't know. All the way that this whole episode went was just delightful for me.
It really was. So Owen wants him to leave them alone, but then Obi-Wan asks if he's okay. Owen is suspicious of him, thinking that he only cares if Luke is showing an affinity for the Force. And Obi-Wan says that they've talked about this. When the time comes, Luke has to be trained. And then we get this Owen sick burn. He said, like you trained his father. Anakin is dead. I know, right?
Yeah.
Anakin is dead. Ben, I won't let you make the same mistake twice. And as Owen is about to leave, they hear the fifth brother ordering someone to get back. So it's already like they're having that conversation, but then the Inquisitors really just interrupt that. And I was like super shocked that Obi-Wan was coming up that close to the Inquisitors.
Right. That they were even in the same vicinity this early.
But I also think that goes to show like Obi-Wan is dampening the Force, like his usage of the Force, and like he's closed off to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll talk about that in the chapter 2 breakdown, I think in a big way. But yeah, he's definitely not as, you know, in tune with the Force. Like,
Yeah. So they clear a path for Reva and the fifth brother as Obi-Wan hides. They announce they're looking for a hidden Jedi, and the fifth brother offers a reward, but Reva offers punishment. Hands go first. And then a woman boldly or dumbly says, this is the Outer Rim. You have no rights here. We're not under the Empire's. And then Reva slices off the woman's hand. Like, what was she thinking?
I don't know.
Pretty dumb. Reva sees Owen watching her, like he's the only one not really looking down, and then calls out to him, approaching him, and she begins questioning him, and she asks if he has a Jedi on his farm, and Owen says, no, I have no love for the Jedi. Jedi are vermin. I kill vermin on my farm, which kind of seems like a subtle threat to Obi-Wan as well, like who's watching.
Absolutely. That's like, stay away from me and mine, you know?
Yeah. And Reva is a little heavy handed and asks Owen if he thinks that he can protect his family from her. And I've got a prediction. I think by the end of the series, he will end up protecting his family from her.
Yeah.
Because Owen Lars is bad A.
No, I mean, just to be able to say that with a straight face when you just watched like Reva just chopped somebody's hand off, you know, and Owen's not even phased, like he's not breaking.
Yeah. So Reva's upset, yells that if they don't learn where the Jedi is, Owen and his family will die. Like, just she like flies off the railings a lot. She's just like on a rampage almost.
Zero even to 100 immediately.
Yeah, even the fifth brother is like, dang, girls, calm down. Jeez. Owen looks where Obi-Wan is hiding, and she ends up igniting her saber at Owen's throat, and the fifth brother slams down a bounty puck and shows a hologram of Nari, not Obi-Wan. So that's who they're looking for. And the fifth brother orders Reva to stand down, and then they depart. In an alleyway, the fifth brother confronts Reva, and he tells her that she's too impulsive. He says that the Grand Inquisitor was right. She still wants Kenobi, but they won't find him. They spent the last 10 years looking for him. And the fifth brother asks, what is it that you will think by you will gain by capturing him? And she says, what I'm owed. And then they leave, and Obi-Wan exits his hiding spot, thanking Owen. And Owen grunts, and he says he didn't do it for him. Now, Mac, I got a question for you.
Okay.
Is it possible that, I mean, most of these Inquisitors were former Jedi.
Right.
Is it possible they're still kind of operating as a Jedi would, of like offering a reward, whereas Reva is offering punishment? And like, they're still kind of like transitioning out of that mindset.
Yeah. Man, this is the first time I'm having to deal with knowing information from later in the show and then knowing what chapter we're breaking down now and not just immediately talking about chapter two stuff. It's a unique challenge of the dual episode premiere. She is obviously different from the other Inquisitors in a big way. There's something definitive that makes her different. She uses a different lightsaber. Like, it seems like maybe she's younger a little bit too.
Yeah, I got that sense too. Yeah.
So yeah, I think we're gonna learn more about her story. And I think, you know, remembering that opening scene, I think maybe might be important for Reva's story.
Yeah, potentially maybe one of those younglings. We'll see. I've got another theory that I want to talk about on our next episode, breaking down part two, that Reva might come from. It's out there. That's for sure. Make sure you listen to our part two breakdown as well. So we cut back to Alderaan. It's great to see it in one piece and not exploded into a million chunks of rock.
It's much prettier this way.
Yes. And a ship lands as Bria and Leia join Bail Organa. Jimmy Smits. Let's go.
I hoped we were going to get some Jimmy Smits. This is already a good bit of Jimmy Smits, I thought we'd get. I'm pumped about that development. He's so good as Bail.
And surely we're going to get him in Andor as well.
It would just make sense.
It would make sense. So the interplay between him and Leia is just perfect. It's perfect the way they talk to each other.
When they have their big moment, you know, later, tearing up. Like,
yes, absolutely.
Just their chemistry off the charts.
It really is. And Brea's sister and family exit the ship as Leia greets her cousin, and then speeders fly through the city as the citizens wave. This seems like a very peaceful planet where there's no weapons at all. Very nice place. At a royal reception, awkward family political discussions begin to take place. We've all been there. Bail is trying his best to bite his tongue as someone's saying something very like controversial, and he's trying not to like start an argument right there in front of everyone.
Yeah.
Did you notice in the background we can see C-3PO facilitating a conversation between two parties? That was a nice touch.
Doing some like maybe translating or something like that. It was perfect.
Yeah. He is living his best life right there.
This is the only time in C-3PO's whole history that he's doing like what he was meant to do.
He's fulfilling his purpose. Leia is made fun of by her cousin for thanking her droid that brings them food. And she says, it's just good manners. And he says, you don't need manners when you're talking to a lower life form. And then she says, then I guess I don't need manners when I'm talking to you.
Got him.
Love it. Then the cousin does, but like this is a classic technique. The cousin does the classic, you're a adopted comeback. And then Leia starts just to break him completely down in front of everyone. And my question for you, is it possible she perceives these things through the Force?
Absolutely. I think Leia's Force sensitivity has always manifested itself a little bit differently than Luke. Mm-hmm. You know, she's not doing the rough and tumble action adventure type Force stuff. She's, you know, influencing events through politics and things like this. Yeah, so I love that they're setting up that the Force is working through her in those ways too. You know, like her intuition is, I think, the way that it's really manifesting itself. Like she can read somebody immediately well past what she should be able to as a 10-year-old, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Sure. It's really cool.
It is cool. And so like, as she's dressing him down, like Bail and Brea watch, you can tell Bail is a little proud of her. He's kind of like, yeah, you go, Leia. But then we cut to Leia's room where they get onto her for doing that. And Brea leaves after getting onto her and Bail sticks around. And Bail says, I wanted to live out way past Cthu when I was your age. Chase Pergil, you know. And that's a cool Star Wars Rebels reference. Yeah. Again, Pergil are essentially space wells that can jump into hyperspace. They're very mysterious and I would say rare. And so, that was a cool connection there. And then Bail gives her the Mufasa speech. This is what I'm calling it.
I love that. Basically.
And he basically tells her, this is your future, Leia. And like kind of pointing out to all of Alderaan, you're going to be a senator, those type of things. But Leia says she doesn't want to be a senator. She's not even an Organa. And then Bail gets upset a little bit and bends down and he promises her that she's an Organa in every way. And I just got to say, Jimmy Smits is a treasure.
Yes.
He is so good.
Man, this moment, I was seriously at like, you know, 4:30 in the morning or whatever it was, just like sitting in my recliner trying not to cry, because just like their chemistry and everything is just really touching, and the writing is so good. And I don't know, I love it's really cool, and I hope we're gonna get to explore it more, but we've got the opportunity to see not only how Anakin and Padme are influential in Luke and Leia's development, right? The traits that they get from them and stuff, but the traits they're getting from their adopted families.
Yes.
And you know, the different things that are all adding together to be the sum of their personalities. And it's just really cool.
It is really cool. And like you, I was very touched by this, because I've been thinking of like, I'm about to have a daughter in a month, my first child ever. And like just that conversation that they were having with each other, it's like, yeah, he's a good dad. That's someone that I need to model myself after. Like that's a good dad move there.
I was wondering if that was going to hit differently for you.
It did. It really did. Like, and I mean, it was touching either way, but like now that I'm super close to having my first child and it being a daughter, it's like, okay, wow. And like really all of Leia's scenes in these two episodes were hitting me like in a way of like, wow, this is really cool. I really enjoyed that scene. So Bail convinces Leia to apologize, even though they kind of both agree, like he deserved it, but you still need to apologize because that's the right thing to do. And then later Leia runs back into the woods and Bail knows she's gone out again. And as she enters the woods, a creepy man waits for her and two others enclosed behind her. I think one is a Fallen, which is a species that's the lizard species. If you are familiar with the old Shadows of the Empire from 1996 thing, Prince Shizor was a Fallen, and they chase her through the woods. It's quite a chase. Like I feel like they could have caught her a lot earlier, but you know, you gotta play it up a little bit for the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's also showing that Leia is capable for her age, you know?
I did think a little bit of like the training stuff on Rise of Skywalker,
Yes, there were some of the same kind of when she did the slide thing, mm-hmm. and yeah.
Yeah, because like Leia ended up really being Rey's master. And right. so it was like kind of cool to see that legacy right there being birthed. And so one of the guards that went to go look for her arrives and he rushes towards Leia as she yells out for him, but he's gunned down and they trap her and put a bag over her head. And then we cut to black. And then we hear a beeping noise. And we're back in Obi-Wan's cave. His communicator is going off. It's Bail Organa and Brea. And they are pleading to Obi-Wan for help. And she, basically Brea says, she needs you, Obi-Wan. And Obi-Wan tries to come up with other solutions. But Bail argues that she's important. But Obi-Wan says he can't leave. He says, my duty is to the boy. But Bail cuts him off. What about your duty to his sister? She's as important as he is. I love that line.
I do too.
Okay, so let me ask you this while we're right here. Do you feel like at any point Bail thought that, like, obviously he knows who her father is, Anakin, mother Padme. Do you ever think he was thinking like she would be using the Force or be trained as a Jedi as well? Like, I know he says something about being a senator, but
right. I think just Bail is coming from a different world and a different perspective than like Obi-Wan is, you know. I think that Bail's not coming into this situation with the baggage of like the Chosen One prophecy and all of that kind of stuff, right? He right. just sees these children, you know, are going to be the future for the galaxy. And like, I'm going to do what I can to make sure that they're set up in a good way to influence things as they need to influence things down the road.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if, you know, Bail and Brea had any conversations about, you know, what are we going to do if she starts showing Force powers or, you know,
right.
It's an interesting thing to think about, but and also there wasn't any guarantee, you know, I guess that these children were going to be Force sensitive. Like
true.
They really didn't know, you know, I guess there's a high probability of it since Anakin's got the midichlorian readings off the charts and all that.
Now, it's interesting, like, while we're on this topic of conversation, it's interesting to me that, like, Obi-Wan's willing to wait to train Luke until he's ready when the Jedi dogma says he's already too old to be trained.
Yeah, that is, so, that's a very interesting thing. You would, in my mind, Obi-Wan would probably kind of see what happened with Anakin. And right. maybe use that to reinforce that reasoning.
Yeah.
You know, like in my mind, he would be like, oh yeah, we really should have not trained him. He was too old. We couldn't get the way of thinking into him early enough or something
right,
like that.
Right.
That's an interesting thought. Maybe it's just completely circumstantial, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, considering the state in which Obi-Wan is in his own life, he's kind of cut off from the Force. He's in no place to train him yet. Really, right. Obi-Wan's not ready. And I think that's what this show is all about. Obi-Wan yes. becoming ready to train Luke.
Absolutely. Especially, I mean, this first episode, like, it's the inciting incidents, the jumping off point. Yeah. He's finally going to have to rise to the challenge, get out of this daily grind he's been in for 10 years, you know?
Right.
And then, yeah. So, and he's got training himself to do. We can't forget about that.
Right.
Do you think maybe he's waiting for Qui-Gon's guidance?
I don't know. And that's what I was about to ask you is, do you think that they've started, like, he's already started training with Qui-Gon, or like that's something that's already started and then it stopped, or like he just hasn't been able to do anything because he's closed himself off from the Force? Like, where do you think that training is at right now?
I think Obi-Wan has done the book learning from Yoda.
Okay.
And I think he has tried his best for 10 years to get in touch with Qui-Gon and hasn't been able to do it yet.
That's kind of where I'm at too.
Because exactly what you said, he's closed off from the Force. The events of this show, I think, have the potential to get him kind of back into, you know, communion with the Force and everything like that, open himself back up to it. And thus, that's going to be the window through which he gets to, you know, see Qui-Gon again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So after Bail says, "What about your duty to his sister? She's as important as he is." Obi-Wan really has this haunted gaze on his face. He says he's not the person he used to be, and to find someone else, which I never thought, like, this for Obi-Wan to do that, he is in a pretty dark place.
Yes. Yeah, I was shocked. I was like, wow. And this too. Is Bail, your old friend Bail, that's asking, you know, and you're just willing to say no.
Not like, only that, it's basically your brother's daughter. Like, this is your niece, in a sense. You know, like, you're not even going to help?
Right.
Like, it's Obi-Wan's in a dark place right now. So after he turns them down and tells them to find somebody else, like a bounty hunter or something, we cut to a ship rocketing through space, and the kidnappers tie her up, sealing her away. And then back on Tatooine, the same scene, different day. Obi-Wan seems more troubled, though, as he goes through the motions. You can tell that the events are starting to get to him. It's really weighing down on him. His conscience is getting to him. And then when he enters town, a crowd has gathered, and gazing up at the hanged body of Nari.
Yeah.
They didn't go quite like hanging by his neck or anything like that.
Which is,
but, like,
totally fine. I don't think they needed to do that at all.
Absolutely not. You get the sense of like what that was supposed to invoke of like, right. Here's a dead body. Like, we found him. You guys could not hide him. We conquered. And it's also kind of like a warning to anybody else of don't ever hide Jedi. Right. Obi-Wan sees him. His face falls when he sees Nari. He's despondent. And then he returns home and the sensor scope emerges, but this time it's a red light. That means somebody's inside. That's how that ring system works on Tatooine.
Wonder if it makes the same old chime.
Yeah. He enters and a cloaked figure is standing inside. And at first I thought this was yet another Jedi, but it turns out it's Bail Organa. Like, he's kind of wearing like a Jedi cloak a little bit.
Bail was like, "I'm not taking no for an answer. I'm just going to go in person. If
you gotta do what you gotta do."
Oh yeah. You're gonna do what you gotta do to save your daughter, for sure.
That's exactly right. So he announces that they're heading for Dayu, and Obi-Wan argues that he can't do it, but Bail is pleading with him, and he tells him it's time to move on from the past. He says, "You couldn't save Anakin, but you can save her." Yeah. And then Obi-Wan asks, "But what if I can't?" And then Bail replies, "There is no one I trust more with my child than you. Please, old friend, for her, one last fight." So this is the moment where, like, in that hero's journey that Obi-Wan is going on, this is he's been debating, right? Now it's time to take that step out, and he's choosing to go out on this journey. And that's what's really nice, like, about the monomyth and the hero's journey, is like that action that the hero has to take. Like, it's not by accident that Obi-Wan's doing this. Now, it's taken him a long time to get to this point, but he's taken the action to go and be the hero.
Yeah. He's made a decision. There's a lot of cool hero's journey stuff going on to talk about here. It'll probably be more of a broad series in general discussion when we've seen it all, but
for sure. So we cut to the kidnapper ship as it flies towards Dayu, and Leia manages to get Lola free and turns her on, asking her to untie her. And it begins, but then the head kidnapper suddenly enters, grabbing Lola and throwing her to the ground. And Leia says that her father will send a whole army to save her. And then we cut to dark and then back to the deserts of Tatooine. Obi-Wan gets off with a small shovel and begins digging. And then back on the ship, the kidnappers talk about what a bad idea it is to do this. And then back in the desert, Obi-Wan uncovers a box and he opens it, and his lightsaber and Anakin's lightsaber is inside. Now, this is, I guess, the same box that he shows Luke in A New Hope.
It looked like it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So back
Need to get on record real fast. The lead kidnapper is Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers, the bassist.
I thought he was familiar looking. Are you serious?
It's Flea.
Are you kidding me?
I didn't believe it until I saw just the word Flea in the credits. I was like, surely it's just somebody who looks like him or can, like, acts like him and talks like him. And
so I guess he really likes Star Wars.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Maybe.
That's cool. He does a good job being creepy.
For sure.
Really good job. Yeah. So back on the ship, Reva speaks with the kidnapper, Flea. His character name is Vect Nakru. And she knows that Obi-Wan fought beside Bail in the Clone Wars. So this is likely to draw Obi-Wan out. That's the plan of, like, that's why they're kidnapping her, because she knows about the connection between Obi-Wan and Bail Organa. So back in Mos Eisley, Obi-Wan approaches the spaceport. He looks at the token, wondering one last time if he should go. And then an attendant asks if he's coming or not. And he makes his choice. He offers the token. We get a glimpse of his lightsaber heading towards the transport. And then we cut to black. End of episode.
Man, what a good first installment. It sets up what the show's going to be. It gives you everything you need to know about Obi-Wan's mindset, what the stakes are, sets up the Inquisitors. Just such a good first installment.
And I really love, like, when it ends, it looks like the end of a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
That was cool, too.
Yeah.
So maybe that kind of makes it feel a little more cinematic a little, too.
Yeah, and they had the long time ago in a galaxy far, far away,
yeah, they did,
to start out the recap. You know, I thought that was a perfect way to start the recap.
Yeah,
I don't know. There's a lot of those little touches, I think, that makes it feel really special.
It does feel special. So, like, overall, this episode, I thought it was a great first episode. And, like, even if we didn't get the 2-episode premiere, I feel like this would have done a good job of drawing people in for, like, yeah, I'm in. Now, of course, yeah, I understand why they also did the 2nd episode, because the end of the 2nd episode is like, okay, let's go.
Right. Right.
But, like, as a premiere by itself, this did everything it needed to do. It kind of set up, where is Obi-Wan currently? What are the stakes? It gave us some huge surprises with Leia and Bail Organa. I mean, and it also, like, set up some of the hints and stuff that will come throughout the rest of the season, like Qui-Gon and some things going on with Reva and the competition between the Grand Inquisitor and herself and just all these different things. It did such a good job of setting up things and not feeling like set up. So, like, overall, I thought this episode was fantastic. It was such a good time just to really soak it in. It felt like classic Star Wars with the mix of the prequels and the original trilogy. Alderaan feels almost kind of like Spaceballs a little bit, like, but in a good way, like, yeah. Right? Did it not feel that way?
Maybe. I don't know.
If you're listening, maybe you can kind of confirm what I'm thinking too. I don't know. But it felt that way. It just, everything about it was like nostalgic, but also new. It was like the perfect mix of things.
Yeah, I agree. I love that we're focusing on Leia. I think that's such a great twist. We just assumed it was going to be Luke, right? And
right. Yeah.
So I don't know. I love how they done that. Pumped about that. Leia's perfect. All the performances are wonderful, I think. Mm-hmm. Ewan McGregor doing a lot of work there. Like, I think he's, you know, Obi-Wan feels like Obi-Wan, you know, just everything's in place. Moses Ingram, I'm so excited to watch her for the rest of the show, because, like, she's doing work for Reva.
Yeah, I saw some people say, like, she felt very heavy-handed. that's on purpose. Like,
that's Reva a Star Wars is, villain.
Well, but also like Reva is like, even the other Inquisitors are like, you got to tone it down. Like,
right.
Yeah. You know, like that's part of the story there of like, she is very ambitious and she's trying to do something, which what I assume is for Darth Vader, which we'll talk about in our episode or part two breakdown.
Yeah.
So because this was a back-to-back breakdown, we are going to let this breakdown breathe a little bit. And the second part breakdown will be coming out tomorrow, Saturday, May 28th. Yep. If you're listening to this already on Saturday, maybe you just found us, then they're both out right now. Yeah. But we're going to release the first one first, let it breathe a little bit, and then release the second part tomorrow for you guys to listen. So make sure you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, yeah, or wherever you listen your podcasts, and on our YouTube as well, and take part in our contest. Look for that image, and then you'll be able to maybe get some fabulous prizes as well. This has been a lot of fun, Mac. I can't wait to be back. Like, it's, we just did the Book of Boba Fett and now here we are. We're back.
Yeah. No, I mean it, and what a great first episode to be back on. Just so excited about everything in store for us. Again, you know, check out the Patreon if you're interested in that. If you're liking what we're doing here, you want some more, you know, go check that out. Check out keepthewatch.com for merch and that kind of stuff.
And call our Hello There hotline with your thoughts and theories. That's 205-259-6675. 205-259-6675. You can find that in the show notes as well.
Yeah. The music we're going to go out on is from my band Carpool Kids. We're going to be releasing the song you're going to hear on, you know, Spotify and all the streaming stuff pretty soon. So check
that out. Nice. And if you guys don't mind, if you can't support us on Patreon, please give us a 5-star review. That helps us out so much. And then word of mouth helps out a podcast. Like, share this with your friends and family. Let them in on the fun as well. We want everybody to be able to enjoy this. And this is just kind of a fun way to digest the show too. Like, the reason we do it in this format is just because we kind of like this format. So we hope that you guys do too.
Yeah, this is what we would be doing if we didn't have mics in front of us, you know? Exactly. So,
going every piece of it, we got to talk about it. So
yeah, for sure.
We hope you guys enjoyed it, and make sure you stick around for our part two breakdown.
Yeah, we'll see you in the part two. And then also we'll have a Hello There hotline episode pretty shortly after that at some point. But until then, keep the watch.